This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehi Suhib, coming up on Africa News Tonight.
My appeal is for all those present here to step up to our common responsibility to support refugees and our common responsibility to recognize the enormous effort that Uganda is making, the enormous sacrifices the Uganda people are making, and to support this country in this very, very challenging moment.
That's UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres at a Uganda summit on refugee relief. Details coming up.
Also, thousands of Nigerian refugees fleeing Boko Haram atrocities have been trapped under difficult conditions in Cameroon's northern border, and a tech firm in Kenya is targeting low-income earners in rural areas with solar power.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story, thousands of Nigerian refugees fleeing Boko Haram atrocities have been trapped under very difficult humanitarian and security conditions in Cameroon's northern border. They are crammed in a makeshift camp not far from another one hosting 2,000 internally displaced Cameroonians. Moki Edwin Kinziga reports from Kolofata on Cameroon's northern border with Nigeria.
Please come back to me. Are you happy?
Dozens of Nigerians on a daily basis continue to arrive at a makeshift camp on the outskirts of Kolofata in Cameroon's northern border with Nigeria. Among the new arrivals is 51-year-old cattle rancher Ibrahima Dauda. He says he fled his Gamburungala village in Borno State after a recent Boko Haram attack.
We were afraid of Boko Haram. We were afraid. That's why we run and then come here. They kill our people, cutting their neck, firing them. I used to load trailer of cow, take it to Warri, Lagos, everywhere. But now, see, I'm sitting, not anything to do. We're not having enough food.
Dauda says they lack medical care. Some 1,200 Nigerians have recently settled in the camp. Within 2 weeks, 20 suicide bomb attacks have targeted the camp and surrounding villages. Midji Yawa Bakari, governor of the far north region of Cameroon, says it will be better for all of the Nigerians to relocate.
Nous sommes formels. Ce site n'est pas sécurisé.
He says Cameroon has made it abundantly clear that because the site is not secured and can be likely attacked by the insurgents, the refugees should go back to safer localities in Nigeria before the July 15 date start of voluntary repatriation, as signed in a tripartite agreement between UNHCR, the government of Cameroon, and the government of Nigeria. Some of the refugees are asking to be taken to the Minawawo refugee camp. René Emmanuel Sadi, Cameroon's Minister of Territorial Administration and Decentralization, says the camp, which was created to host 25,000 refugees, is now home to 75,000. The number had diminished to 60,000 last month when some refugees decided to return. But with the increase in raids by the Nigerian army on Boko Haram's remaining strongholds in the Sambisa forest and the multinational joint task force fighting the insurgents, there is no space for them at Minawawo.
We cannot continue to send people there. And with the agreement of the Nigerian authorities of the border, we organize their return to their country in localities where they could live safely.
Rosalind Okoro, assistant UNHCR representative in charge of refugee protection, says forced returns constitute a serious violation of the 1951 Refugee Convention and the 1969 OAU Convention, both of which Cameroon has ratified.
La protection des réfugiés et la protection de son territoire.
She says it is possible for Cameroon to protect both the refugees, its citizens, and its territory at the same time. And that is what the UNHCR has been requesting the governments of Cameroon to do. Besides the refugees, Cameroon says the number of internally displaced persons has also increased from barely 9,000 to 19,000 at the Kolofata camp within a month. Earlier this month, the United Nations cautioned people against traveling to the far north region of Cameroon, saying that the arrest of the Boko Haram commander in charge of the town of Kuseri had triggered a surge of violence. The government has not confirmed that arrest. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Kolofata, Northern Cameroon.
The international community has been challenged to share Uganda's burden of hosting Africa's largest refugee population by contributing towards their support. The call was made during the just-concluded Uganda Refugee Solidarity Summit that sought to create new partnership for Uganda's refugee funding. Uganda needs $8 billion U.S. dollars for refugees in the next 4 years, or $2 billion per year. VOA's Catherine Nambi files this report from Kampala.
Uganda's fastest-growing refugee population has been the reason behind the just-concluded Refugee Solidarity Summit. Over 900,000 of the country's 1.2 million refugees come from neighboring South Sudan. The two-day summit that started yesterday aimed at generating $2 billion U.S. dollars as new funding for the humanitarian and development needs of the refugees. It was organized by the President of Uganda, Yoweri Museveni, and the UN Secretary General, Antonio Guterres. Guterres implored the international community to show solidarity with Uganda through increased funding.
My appeal is for all those present here to step up to our common responsibility to support refugees and our common responsibility to recognize the enormous effort that Uganda is making, the enormous sacrifices the Uganda people are making, and to support this country in this very, very challenging moment. Your solidarity today is a must, because without that solidarity, this effort is not sustainable. And if this effort is not sustainable, the impact on the stability of the region will be absolutely dramatic.
Museveni, on the other hand, explained to delegates at the summit that refugee needs range from clothing and shelter to education.
The people must be fed. Shelter is a big problem. Providing energy for them, for cooking, for lighting, so that they do not destroy the environment by cutting the trees. Water for household use and for production. Allowances for clothing and other household needs. Education for knowledge and skills, so that, especially for the children and the youth, do not lose time for knowledge and skills acquisition.
A number of international partners at the summit made pledges and contributions towards the plight of the refugees. Among these are the European Union, EU, which has made a new contribution of over $100 million, while the UK pledged $50 million. Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates pledged $5 million, while the US has pledged to increase its funding by an unspecified amount. Since October, US has provided $154 million in refugee humanitarian assistance to Uganda. Simon Henshaw is Acting Assistant Secretary, US Bureau of Population, Refugees and Migration.
And I'm here to show our solidarity with the Ugandan government and the Ugandan people and the great job they're doing in supporting their brothers and sisters who are fleeing war and violence. The United States is proud to be a large contributor for humanitarian needs, the largest in the world. We've increased our assistance in Uganda this year and will continue to support humanitarian efforts in Uganda.
Meanwhile, UN Secretary General Guterres has challenged the summit to continue deliberating on efforts to return peace to South Sudan, which is home to most of the refugees.
Leadership of South Sudan is responsible, but we are all responsible for not having helped create the conditions for this country that emerged as a new independent country to be able to live in peace and harmony among its different community groups. I think the international community needs to do everything possible to stop this terrible suffering of the South Sudanese people.
Uganda currently hosts 1.2 million refugees from South Sudan, Burundi, DRC, Somalia, Rwanda, and Eritrea. The number has doubled from 500,000 during the second half of 2016 due to mass exodus of refugees from South Sudan who are fleeing the volatile situation in their country. Uganda has been receiving about 2,000 South Sudan refugees per day for the last 6 months, and it is projected that a further 400,000 more will arrive in the country by the end of the year. This is Catherine Nambi for VOA Africa News in Kampala.
A tech firm in Kenya is targeting low-income earners in rural areas with solar power. The move will help meet the needs of the rural poor who remain unconnected to the national grid. From Nairobi, Ruben Chama reports.
Azuri Technologies, an energy technology venture with its roots in the United Kingdom, is seeking to meet the energy needs of low-income earners in rural communities. The company is leveraging solar and mobile technology to allow users in Kenya and a dozen other African countries to access renewable distributed power on a pay-as-you-go basis. Conrad Whitaker is Azuri Technologies' global distribution manager.
Right now, our biggest markets would be Kenya, followed by Ethiopia, Tanzania, Zambia, Nigeria, and Ghana. Well, I think there's the need, right? There's 600 million people without reliable electricity. And when we look at our target market, a lot of them will go to bed at night, or if they have light, they'll use something like kerosene, which has its risks. It's not very bright. It can be damaging to the health. There's a fire risk, and it's expensive. So there's just an absolute demand.
Besides being a leading commercial provider of Heygo solar home systems to rural off-grid communities, Azuri Technologies is now working with a pay TV provider called Zuku. Together, they are offering an appealing package to consumers looking to purchase several hours of electricity for their home and to news, information, and entertainment. The package, which costs about $1.50 per day or 145 Kenya shillings, will provide access to 48 TV and 21 radio channels. Also included is a rechargeable portable radio and four bright lights for the home. Richard Onditi is Azuri Technologies Regional Manager for the Central Kenya region.
The flexibility and the convenience in terms of like installation. It's a plug and play kit and it's very straightforward. And then it comes with its plug and play kit that's very easy to install and set up. So the reception has been good, and then there's also the option that most of us who are off-grid get an affordable source of lighting with a convenience mode of payment.
Zakaria Maundu is a 37-year-old teacher at a primary school in Wakalia Village, Kirinyaga County in central Kenya. He is among many of Azuri's clients who pay for the package that brings electricity and multiple media programming to his home.
In fact, when they came with this component, I saw it, I liked it very much, and I went to them. Then we arranged. After we arranged, they brought me TV. Then from that day on, we have enjoyed to be connected to the world, because through this one we are about to see the news, to watch the news, and my children are able to see the cartoons. So in other words, children are not loitering around, especially during the weekends.
Only launched in December, the plug-and-play package is gaining popularity among rural dwellers, and Azuri Technologies is optimistic about future growth. Its product is an answer to blackouts from the national power grid. At the same time, its website notes that Kenya has over 12 million households, only about 40% of which have access to television. The company expects to expand from central Kenya to the whole nation this year to over 5 million potential clients with no access to electricity. Ruben Chama, VOA News, Nairobi.
19 past the hour, you were listening to African News Tonight on The Voice of America. In war-torn Mali, wildlife conservation has not been high on the agenda, but that's changing with the help of a Zimbabwe-based conservation group. Reporter Kudzai Zanashi has the story.
In Mali, the white desert elephant has been on the verge of extinction, but the situation is improving thanks to Chengeta Wildlife. Chengeta, which means to keep or protect in Shona, is a non-profit organization co-founded by Zimbabwean Rory Young. The organization is working with two international partners to save the elephant, the World Foundation and the International Conservation Fund of Canada. Nigel Kuhn is a Zimbabwean anti-poaching assistant instructor with Chengeta Wildlife in Mali. He talks about the threat to elephants in Mali.
The communities that live in these areas of elephant movements, they've lived there for hundreds of years at least. So the elephant has survived because of the communities, not in spite of them, which is a really important point to make. And it's the outsiders who are coming in. So when I say outsiders, I'm talking about the jihadists and the troublemakers that are coming into Mali that are the main causes of this new threat to the elephants.
He says, at this time, Mali is politically unstable and the situation is likely to get worse. He adds, anti-poaching work in the world can be dangerous, but in Mali, the risks are unique.
In Mali, the risks are unlike any other anti-poaching operation we would normally find ourselves in. Our principal area of operation is in the Gourma region of Mali, which is a hotbed of Islamic extremism and banditry and trafficking of all sorts. We frequently receive intelligence that our unit is being targeted, which means we could have landmines put out onto the route. The standard modus operandi is to hit a unit with an anti-tank mine and then attack with small arms. So we're constantly on our guard with fingers on the trigger. And
he says the UN considers Mali as one of its most dangerous postings, and their anti-poaching team often comes into contact with jihadists and other anti-government groups. The team is made up of 35 men, 30 from the Malian army and 5 from the Department of Water and Forests. As its successes grow, Chengeta Wildlife has begun receiving invitations from other countries in West Africa and Central Africa. Kuhn shares the victories they have recorded in Mali.
From mid-January, there hasn't been one elephant poached in the Gourma region of Mali. So going on from last year's numbers, there could have been up to 36 a month, which would have put us well over 100. With this specific herd of elephant, which is now so tiny, you know, every elephant saved is a victory. You know, on one occasion we saw juveniles and babies, and that for me was a fantastic moment where new life was coming through. And if we can keep that up and you know, we suddenly get to a point where the population is growing by 5 elephants a year, because that's the reality, then that's another victory.
In Mali, Chengeta Wildlife uses a holistic approach to conservation, one that includes helping communities. The group believes that an impoverished community is prone to engage in poaching or will be willing to tolerate it. The long-term goal is to create community-run poaching teams. Until that happens, Chengeta has been equipping locals in Mali with skills that will enable them to conserve their wildlife when the team returns to Zimbabwe. Kuhn says the team is beefing up its efforts there. The new project called the Masuwe Elephant Conservation Program will recruit volunteers to help fight poaching in Zimbabwe. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zinawashe from Harare.
A number of factors can go into helping an entrepreneur build a great company. They include a solid business plan, a marketing opportunity, and simple good luck. However, a dedicated mentor can make the crucial difference between failure and success. VOA's Adam Phillips has this report on a UN-based mentoring program, or US-based mentoring program, that connects talented emerging women leaders from all over the world with powerful American women dedicated to mentoring them.
Deep within a U.S. State Department building near the United Nations, 21 women from 15 countries were talking and laughing together and saying bittersweet goodbyes. It was the final hour of this year's four-week Fortune Global Women's Mentoring Partnership. The annual program is co-sponsored by the State Department, along with the Fortune Most Powerful Women Network, an elite group of leaders mostly from the business world, and Vital Voices, a global NGO dedicated to women's empowerment. Chris Miner directs the program for the State Department. She explains to VOA why the State Department promotes international mentorship and why it focuses on women.
The State Department wants to support economic development for men and women around the world to create more stable communities, to provide people in those communities the opportunity to have a job, to feel fulfilled, and this is one way to do that. And we invest in women leaders because we recognize that they are the peace builders in their own communities and that they will go back with the skills and the connections that they've gotten in the U.S. and create opportunities for people in their own communities and offer mentoring programs for women and girls and education for people in their own countries.
Mentee Philomena Maburu is the founder and CEO of Fina Consulting, a successful Nairobi-based technology company. Maburu is passionate about creating opportunities for Kenya's many underemployed technology graduates. She hopes that outsourcing their app-building skills to American companies will help create many jobs.
I don't really know whether what we are selling is going to sell in America. So part of the mentorship was, is what we're offering as a service viable there? And at what price?
Maburu was paired with mentor Amy Lucia, a senior branding executive at Blackbaud. It's a global firm specializing in fundraising and software for nonprofit groups. Lucia put Maburu in touch with the company's outsourcing experts.
So that I could understand what it is that they look for in a vendor so that I would be able to provide that for my American clients. And most of them spoke hugely to the fact that they like collaboration.
Like Maburu, Shema Kadri of Cairo wants to combine her business skills with her desire to help society. She runs a small independent survey company dedicated to collecting and sharing public opinion data. Her company also trains children in critical thinking. She hoped the mentorship program would help grow her business and even promote democracy in Egypt.
So they were talking to me about mergers and acquisition and how to grasp opportunities in the market, how to use technology and how we should present ourselves.
Bakadri says the main takeaway for her was about leadership and values, not the technical details of running a business. Her mentor was Deanna Mulligan, president and CEO of the Guardian Life Insurance Company of America.
She's a great lady, and she leads by values. For example, people were the focus of the company. Everyone is accountable for getting the business to be successful. So everyone was yielding ownership to the company.
Program head Chris Miner says mentoring also offers high-powered American businesswomen a cherished opportunity to help others. This creates a lasting bond with participants.
I see them arrive with great ambitions, and I see them leave with practical advice on how to change their worlds and with these relationships that I know will continue forever. I think there is a goal among women to help each other and to help each other succeed. So there's a lot of giving back even after the program is over.
Examples abound. One company donated fish processing equipment to a Ugandan entrepreneur. Another time, a group of mentors pooled resources to buy a bus for a South African participant to transport the orphans she mentors. "We're all sisters now," said one participant, "and sisterhood is powerful." Adam Phillips, VOA News, New York.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiyis Wuhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Curtis Bynum, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there.
VOA.
On weekends, tune into Nightline Africa at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our five-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Music time in Africa. Savor the flavor of African music. Hi, I'm Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Tune in feast your ears and dig in to an hour of amazing Pan-African music, featured interviews, and music news. Music Time in Africa, Friday at 0900 and Saturday and Sunday at 0900, 15, 20, and 2200 hours UTC.